acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 160, Granny Chic, Saturday, March 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I put links and photographs of the things I'm talking about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and so forth. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am feeling especially refreshed and chipper this Saturday morning after having yesterday as a snow day. It was the best variety of snow day, which is a snow day without really any snow. It was cold and it did snow, but the roads near my house were never anything other than wet, and even the snow on the cars was all melted off by 1 p.m., so without any shoveling to do, I had a lot of time to complete some projects that really even haven't been in existence for too long, but I was incredibly productive. So the first finished project is the Mushroom Kelly Muffs. This is an adorable Fair Isle pattern by Spilly Jane. It features a really adorable mushroom motif, and the pattern appears in Fair Isle style. It's a collection of kind of contemporary Fair Isle designs that is edited by Mary Jane Mucklestone. This pattern is so charming and cute. I really want to put these mushroom motifs onto the colorwork yoke of a dress. And so these mitts were sort of a test run for that. It was also my first time using Jameson and Smith yarn that I ordered from the Woolly Thistle. And in fact, I was inspired to knit this pattern because Claire of New Hampshire Knits is hosting a Mitten Cow. Last year, I did not join in and I kind of regretted it. So I thought I would try this pattern, and apparently a lot of folks have been attracted to this pattern because I keep posting on Instagram and getting a lot of very flattering comments, and many folks commenting that they have thought about knitting it or it's been in their queue for a while, that kind of thing. Even though I've done some color work, I have never done color work in such a small circumference as this, and I did learn a few things in knitting this pattern. The first is just the recognition that these color work mitts are in a tube. There are no increases from the wrist or the cuff of the mitt into the palm. And my decision to drop needle sizes all the way down to zero had to do with the fact that the cuff felt kind of loose. Even though it was ribbed, it seemed a little loose. And so I had knit the cuffs on a US-1. It's typical for me to go down at least one needle size for a pattern, and this pattern called for US-2 needles. So I dropped down to 1 for the cuff, and then I went to size 0 for the fabric of the mitt. It yielded a really beautiful, dense fabric, and the motifs are very, very striking. I like my color choices for the yarn. I stuck pretty closely to the colors that were specified in the pattern, but these mitts are really too snug for me. And I think overall, it's a one size mitt. I think it's intended for rather small hands. So they will be a fantastic gift. And I'm very glad to have a gift complete so far in advance of the holidays and to understand the pattern motif pretty well, so that I can think about transferring it to the yoke of a dress. A couple modifications that I made. Because I was knitting on US size 0, I did add some rounds of knitting in the main color just to extend the length of the mitt. And if I were to knit these again, I might even do that more often. So I added a few rounds of the main color before starting the motifs, and then I added a few more before beginning the rib at the fingers. I might consider, if I knit these again, adding some rounds of that main color between the pattern motifs themselves. Another thing I did, because I often find that mitts, even when they end in ribbing, they're a little bit loose around the fingers. And so I started knitting the 2x2 rib as specified. And then a few rounds in, I did some purl two togethers in about 4 or 5 places just to reduce the circumference and add a little bit of a narrowing for the finger part of the mitt. And then the other thing I did was to pick up stitches for the thumb. This was an afterthought kind of thumb, which I have never done before on a mitt. And it was the pattern was created so that both the two mitts are identical. So the thumb juts out from the side of the mitt. There's no real thumb gusset shaping at all. And you're directed to add about 10 stitches worth of waste yarn. And then pick that out, put your stitches on 2 needles, and then you're picking up 2 stitches in the corners and knitting to create the thumb opening. The pattern requires you to start the thumb with the contrasting color yarn, and I didn't think that was going to be such a good idea for me because I had never done this method before, and I thought it might look a little sloppy. So I used my main color yarn, and I'm very glad I did. It also allowed me to extend the length of the thumb a little bit. I had quite a bit of trouble picking up stitches and preventing holes. I had holes on either side of my thumb opening, pretty substantial ones, but I just kind of let that go. And then after I completed the ribbing and everything, I just use the tail end of the yarn to weave in and kind of cover up this hole. And because it's in the main color yarn, you really can't see it. They look pretty good now. And the second one was a little bit easier than the first. It may be that I had a stitch twisted or something like that. I'm not sure. I really enjoyed this Mushroom Kelly Muffs pattern from Spilly Jane because I like the finished product, but also because I think there are some basic techniques incorporated here that could lend themselves to colorwork mitts of many different varieties. So you could just think about the stitch count and import a pattern that you like from somewhere else, or maybe even design some of your own little motifs. And even though this is contemporary, it is in keeping with Fair Isle style or Fair Isle style stranded knitting, in that the motifs are small and very close together, and you're not carrying any one color yarn for a great distance around the circumference of the mitt. That makes them easier for a beginner, I think. I knit these on double-pointed needles, and my technique for making sure that I left enough room for the motif and it didn't cut across corners on the DP ends was that as I knit, if I were just carrying a color from one needle to the other, I just took the mitt and I flattened it out as though I were knitting really on a single needle. And that seemed to prevent this thing that I've heard can happen where the carries inside the mitt are really too short and the whole thing shrinks up. The density of my fabric was due to the US size zeros. It wasn't because I didn't give my floats enough room in the back. So I really enjoyed it and look forward to more colorwork mitts in the future. The other big project that I completed yesterday was the Granny Stripes blanket I began just a few weeks ago. I went into high gear, cleaning up my stash, looking at the scrap yarn that I had and thinking, I've got to do something with this. I need to get rid of it. And before I even knew what I was doing, I had started a Granny Stripes blanket that is sort of all the rage these days. I try to stick with originality in my pattern choices because I think in terms of the podcast, listeners really appreciate hearing different things from different podcasters, and I try not to jump on too many bandwagons, but I was not able to keep that promise in terms of the Granny Stripe blanket. And once I had started it, I just really wanted it to be done. The whole point was to use up scrap yarn, and I wanted it gone. So I cast on what I thought would be a reasonable size. And that's, I guess, just over a yard. I think it's about 40 inches more or less square. And I didn't have a ton of rhyme or reason to my striping. I tried to incorporate some gray and light brown yarn throughout to kind of give it a neutral grounding. I had scraps of my own. I had mini skeins that I've been given, and I've never quite known what to do with them since I wasn't knitting any sort of a modular blanket or anything. And I was able to use that all up and in a very short amount of time. Then I started looking around at what kind of a border to put on. All of these details are included in my Ravelry notes for this pattern, but I did find a crocheted border that was recommended by Robin. She is Sits and Spins. She posts gorgeous photographs of her spinning and other works in progress on Instagram. And she recommended this crochet border that looks pretty sophisticated, but is pretty easy to execute. And I chose quite a very nice fingering weight yarn from my stash to complete this border because I wanted it to have a nice neutral kind of border so that the colors, I don't know, it kind of calmed them down a little bit. And so yesterday I finished up the striping of the blanket and then put on the whole border. And it looks very nice. I have it folded and I have it sitting over the arm of the couch where I often sit and work on projects. It's a nice lap blanket. It will also be nice to have in the car in the summertime and just throw down for a picnic or lounging when we hear some outdoor music and that kind of thing. I did promise that I would only mention this project again upon its completion, and I have completed it. I can see, however, the appeal because it goes quickly and the striping is interesting. There's a little bit of sort of a gem-like glistening, especially when you use some bright or sparkly yarn on a neutral ground. And I can see why it's appealing and has that sort of granny chic look without the granny square look. So it's a nice compromise. And I'm glad I completed the project and used up pretty much all of my sock and sport weight yarn. The front porch. It's a great feeling to get things off the hooks and needles and be able to refocus attention on upcoming projects. I have cast on another pair of socks. I thought about making a purchase of some really interesting fingering weight yarn with spring colors and ultimately decided to use up some more stash yarn. I have some really gorgeous Indulgence Cashmere. This is the KFI Luxury Collection. It's an extra fine merino polyamide cashmere blend, and it's nearly a sport weight yarn because it's 437 yards to 150 grams. I had several skeins of this yarn and used most of it up for an Advent scarf project a couple years ago. There's a really fabulous lady, Trish, who designs a new scarf each year for the holiday season. And she teaches at Mountain Knits and Purls, my local yarn shop. And so I ended up, I don't know if I just didn't use it all, the pattern didn't require it all, or I just foreshortened my Advent scarf because I had some of this gorgeous, really plush yarn left in my stash. So I decided to cast on a pair of socks with it. And this time I am going to try the double gusset. It's recommended by Emily of the Fibertown podcast. It's a pattern by Christy Payne. Basic sock with double gusset heel. But I'm only going to use that pattern really for that double gusset because I've cast on with my typical tubular cast on. I've done a 1x1 rib for a pretty substantial cuff. And then I shifted to a 3x1 rib for the leg of this sock. And I'm using US size 0 needles, even though this is a really generous fingering weight yarn, nearly a sport weight. But the fabric is just so dense and gorgeous. I think this is going to make a really nice pair of gift socks. And I carefully divided the yarn so I would have two balls of equal weight. I'm knitting these socks in tandem. I'm using my Hiya Sharps and my Carbons needles. And I have my really nice needle cozies so that I'm not diving into my bag trying to find needles that have fallen out of the sock. This is a fun knit. It's a great sort of purse knitting project. And I'm excited to find out about the fit and the directions for knitting this double gusset heel. I've enjoyed the single gusset. My mom is really pleased with the fit of her socks that I knit with a bottom of the heel gusset. So I'm eager to see how this double gusset works out. I'm also starting to think about upcoming spring knitting, even though there is something of a setback in the coming of spring here in the Northeast. We had this sort of, in this area, it was kind of a nothing snowstorm yesterday, but apparently there's something big coming this week. So it's not quite spring yet, even though we've had many days in the 50s, 60s, and even low 70s. Winter is still hanging on. I guess they call this the groundhog's revenge. And there is always the chance of significant snowfall in March, even though no one ever seems to remember that. It's true. But nevertheless, I'm thinking about summer tops and hosting a Summer Top make-along. This will begin on April 1st and extend to the first day of summer, which is June 21st. And folks are invited to knit, crochet, sew, anything that's a summer top and certainly works in progress are welcome. So I have a thread open where you can post links and ideas, maybe yarn or fabric choices for summer tops, and we can start giving one another some inspiration before the cal gets, or make-along rather, gets into full swing on April 1. I have some knitting patterns in my queue, and I also really enjoy sewing the willow tank. It's a willow tank and dress is the pattern. So there's also a skirt that you can attach to the bottom of this tank top. And I will be trying that, as well as probably making a few more willow tanks. I really love the pattern. It has a nicely placed bust dart. It's easy to finish with bias tape. You don't really have to cut your own bias tape. You could have a lot of fun playing around with it and cut contrasting bias tape. But one of the things I like about this is I think the willow tank works really well with a very plain back and a really special fabric for the front. I use some Liberty fabric for the front of one of my willow tanks, and I have another one with this beautiful Luna Moth fabric. It's a great way to use some leftovers and just, often I have something over the tank anyway, so the back doesn't show. But I think it's a really, it's very basic pattern, but it's nice. And it has a folded over hem, so there's kind of a weight to the bottom of it, which gives it a very flattering fit. I will be making the willow dress version with two colors of silk. For those of you who've been listening for a while, you may remember my fabulous shopping spree in Pittsburgh at the beginning of last summer with my friend Mary Beth. We visited Loom Exquisite Fabrics for this amazing sale where you could just reach into these bins of fabric labeled $1, $5. And I purchased a few pieces of really gorgeous silk fabric. I don't have a lot of vocabulary to talk about silk, but this type is really inconsistent in terms of its texture. It has kind of like a nubbiness to it, which is absolutely gorgeous. I have a pewter gray and a very deep purple, and I intend to create a dress, a willow dress with those. In fact, I already have that fabric cut out and ready to go. So I will be making that and probably some other tanks as well. And I have three patterns and yarn picked out for some knit summer tops. So I'd like to create almost like a little capsule wardrobe with those and sew a long summer skirt out of linen and then have a few tops that go with that skirt. So I would just really enjoy your company making some summer tops and maybe planning how they would go with other pieces in our wardrobe. I've opened the thread so we can start chatting about it, and I look forward to your comments there. Ever-expanding skill set. During the month of March, we are making sauces. Hashtag Power Pantry with the sauces. I think that being impressive in the kitchen is really about four things. I'm just coming up with this philosophy as I'm saying it right now. I think that people will find you impressive in the kitchen if you can A, roast a chicken, B, know how to use lemon. C, know how to use salt. And D, make a sauce. Maybe that's kind of a very traditional or it could be a little bit of a Eurocentric way of looking at culinary arts, but that's kind of how I came to my culinary skills. So I don't, you know, I don't really have a way to diversify too much from that. But I think that making a sauce is just something that elevates everything else that you have on the plate into a real experience. And I think that has to do with texture, because sauces have this like viscous, gorgeous, sexy mouthfeel in many cases. And I feel like it's as much of the mouthfeel of a sauce as it is the flavor that makes it impressive. So there's a little culinary philosophy for you. This week I made a sauce. I made a mushroom sauce. And looking at the basic types of sauces, I think this would fall under a hunter's sauce. It starts with a roux, and I love to start a sauce by making a roux. That's just equal parts flour and fat. I tend to use butter most often. And they're put in a warm pan. It's crucial not to add too much heat because butter has a very low smoking point and you don't want to get a burnt flavor into the sauce. Toasty is okay, burnt is not. So I use a whisk to whisk that flour and butter together until it bubbles and turns sort of like a caramel in texture and color, and then add liquid to that mixture. It could be wine, it could be broth or chicken stock. In my case, I added some chicken stock, and then I added wine also, and mushrooms and shallots that I had already sauteed, and a little bit of parsley and thyme. And I like to add salt to the vegetables that I cook. So in this case, I didn't really add salt to the sauce. I added salt to the shallots and mushrooms, also a little bit of garlic as they cooked. And so then I tasted to see if it was enough salt and just added a little bit more. I like to finish a very rich brown sauce like that with lemon juice to give it a sort of lift and brightness. I think that combination of the salt and the lemon juice gives it a little bit of pop in the mouth while you have that silky, velvety texture. I served this Hunter's style sauce over polenta and some meatballs that I made with some grass-fed beef, and it was extraordinary. This dish was a hit, and the meatballs were actually a very wise choice for weeknight cooking because I was able to use them in a dish where I sort of went with an Asian type flavor, and then also this dish, and there were leftovers of everything. When I make meatballs either with beef or with turkey, I tend to go with a neutral flavor profile, and that way I can use them in different types of cooking, and they won't have I wouldn't put ginger necessarily in those meatballs because that would give them an Asian flavor, and I wouldn't be able to use them with a mushroom sauce. So I go very basic on that, and then they become a little more versatile in my cooking. This week, I would like to try a variation on a pesto sauce suggested by Maggie's Corner on Ravelry. And she suggests this really vegetable-forward sauce with frozen peas and spinach. I think she uses walnuts and then finishes with pumpkin seeds. It sounds really good. It sounds like a good way to bring some spring into the kitchen, and it would be good over some pasta. I'll have to think of maybe a couple different ways I could use this and make a big batch. And so forth. I'm hoping that after my successes with the Anne Carolyn smock, this becomes a regular segment on my episodes, and then I keep working on some sewing patterns throughout the spring and summer months. Thank you for your very kind words about my most recent episode, which was devoted to a review of the Anne Carolyn smock, a pattern by Ellen Mason. I have not yet decided on the third version of that pattern. I was thinking about ordering Rifle Paper Company fabric, but then I started looking at my current fabric stash and decided to switch gears a little bit and use up some of the things I already have. So that's on hold, a third version, but certainly that pattern is very much worth sewing again. So I will keep it in mind. I had some knit fabric in my stash because one of the goals I had for myself this year, which is year three of my five-year plan for a mostly handmade wardrobe. I would not say I have a closet filled with handmade things, but I do find that I want to wear things I've made more frequently than I want to wear commercially made products. I am not spending money on new clothing. If I buy something new for my wardrobe, it tends to be something from a thrift store. And I'm thinking more and more about how pieces work together in a wardrobe. So far, that's pretty successful. I wanted to start experimenting with sewing knits because many of the things that I love to wear, commercially made pieces of clothing, are made with knit fabrics. And they just have an ease and a comfort that other kinds of fabrics do not. So I decided to sew the 1 hour top. This is a free pattern. You can print the PDF version from online, and it's available through Fancy Tiger Crafts. There's also a Creative Bug tutorial on how to sew this top, both with a regular sewing machine or with a serger. And I thought it would be a good entry point into sewing with knits. First, the top did not take 1 hour to sew. I didn't expect it to because it's my first time working with this kind of fabric. And the fabric I chose had a very wide stripe. It's a horizontal stripe, and I worked for quite a long time trying to get that stripe to match up on the sides of the garment. It's a rather easy garment in terms of the pieces. There are just two, front and back. And putting together the pattern with those PDF printouts isn't too bad. It's not my favorite thing to do, but for a free pattern, I was willing to give it a try. And it came together reasonably well. I cut out the small size, but I extended the length into the largest size of the pattern because it's kind of a crop top and I don't really care for a cropped kind of look too much. So I just extended the length. I graded the pattern as I cut it out. And my stripes line up. And I experimented with some new techniques on my machine. I used the stretch stitch on my sewing machine, and I used the stretch stitch with the zigzag version. And I also used a double needle to finish the hem and the cuffs. I wouldn't say I have enough experience to give any sort of tips on this. I think that I'm still working on adjusting the tension with my machine. And I can see how finishing the seams is kind of difficult unless you have a serger. But there's no serger in my future. Like that's not something I'm looking to purchase or, you know, even longing to purchase. So I would like to continue to experiment with ways to really make my regular sewing machine work with knits. And overall, I've been happy with the ability of my machine to handle some stretch type stitches. For example, many people complain that their machine doesn't really do very well installing elastic thread. And by that, I mean winding elastic thread by hand around a bobbin and then using it to create a gathered section, usually in the back of a skirt or a dress, but you could even do some smocking in the front of a dress. And many people complain that their machine just does not install this elastic bobbin thread. And my machine works beautifully with that. So I think there is potential for my machine to work well with knits. I think it's a matter of me learning how to use the features and adjust them until I get the result that I want. I'm pretty pleased with this initial version of the 1 hour top. I would say in total it took about 4 hours to sew this top, and it will probably take maybe 1.5 or 2 the next time I try it. I think my next version should be something rather neutral, a single color, no stripes, and I might experiment with some very brightly colored thread, and that will help me build my confidence in terms of the seam work, especially the visible seam work. You know, that I could work on the evenness of installing those hems and get a, you know, kind of a fun look with brightly colored thread or something like that. Once again, the sewing patterns that I mentioned in this episode are the Willow Tank and Dress, and that's by Grainline Studios, the Anne Carolyn Smock, and that's available from Ellen Mason, and the 1 hour Top, and that is available in free PDF form from Fancy Tiger.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a suey nature thing. It's a it's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature. thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Two stoves out there stoving, there's a chipmunk on the lawn. Six turkeys up in munching like fat dogs. It's a it's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing.